There seems to be a low-grade frustration in some people in this society and also in the Church of God, even in the Church of God. And most people don't realize what it is, that low-grade frustration. Hence, they do little or nothing about it, and it drives them crazy. Some few, though, do understand what the problem is. They correct it, and their life blossoms very, very nicely. What is that frustration or that cause of the frustration, that particular problem? You're well aware of it. You've just never heard it talked about, maybe, or applied it to yourself or to me or anybody else. Though we know and we recognize it when we see it, and it causes family problems. Since we're in the days of unleavened bread, that reminds us that we should try to do things the proper way. I think this is an appropriate one as we leave the days of unleavened bread and go out into this society and try to apply what we know, what we've heard about God's ways. What causes that frustration and that particular problem? Well, it's this. People try to make other people in their own image. I'm sure you've never tried that. I know you're holding back a snicker right now, or you're embarrassed. People try to make other people in their own image, make them just like them. And quite often they fail miserably. So they back up, fuss and fume in the process, and make others very miserable and unhappy. Let me give you some examples of that. Our president, Barack Obama, is trying to make our nation in his image. And the position that he's in and the decisions that he makes, he tries to make us in his image. And there's beginning to be quite a bit of backlash on that particular thing. When a pastor moves into a church, quite often that pastor tries to make that church in his own image. And I'm sure you've seen examples where that caused no end of difficulties, frustration, and a little bit of anger when the pastor tries to force them to do it exactly as he said and to make them in his image. Often it does not succeed. Parents, many of us are, try to mold their children in their exact likeness. I know we use the expression, he's a spitting image of his father. Maybe so, but he has his differences from his father, or she from the mother. But we do try to mold our children in our exact image, and we never fully succeed. Also, children realize if they do it a certain way, they can take advantage of that, and they try to force the parents into their own configuration. A lot of times they get away with it, and they do, but it never fully succeeds. Husbands, you've heard of husbands abusing their wives, battering them. That's just another example of men trying to force their wives to be like they and to make the wife exactly like them. Husbands try to make their wives in their own image and they fail miserably. They don't understand, first of all, the difference between us, male and female. An inherent difference that in many ways you cannot change. And certainly when you try to force it, causes some difficulties. Of course, in their own sweet way, wives try to form the husbands in their own way, too. And that doesn't work either. I speak from experience. You speak from experience. We all speak from experience. Companies try to make employees in their own likeness. That is, they want them to do it exactly like they say and not give them any thinking on their own. But employees attempt to form the company sometimes according to their own values, and so we have difficulties in the economic world. Even in ethnicities, one tries to form the other in their image and cannot understand why they're not like them, and cause great difficulty in trying to force them to be like someone else. In one way or another, we all wish the other person could be like us. Why can't she be like I am? Why can't he be like I am? Why can't they be like we are? And what we don't know is the other person is wishing at the same time that we could be like they are. It's universal. And it seems to not ever really work, and it does not work the way we want it to work. And in the scheme of things, the plan of God, it never was designed to be that way. It never was. There's a basic flaw in that thinking. A basic flaw. And early in the Bible, God reveals that flawed way of thinking. But we read right over it because it's just another Garden of Eden religious verse that you have to memorize. Let's look in Genesis 1, verse 26, and you'll see the revelation of this flawed thinking and why we can't force others to be in our image. Genesis 1, verse 26, an old, old verse, very well acquainted with, says, God said, the creator of the universe, the one who created Adam from the dust of the ground and Eve from the side of Adam, God said, let us, Elohim, God the Father, Jesus the Word, let us make man, or you might say mankind, which would include man and woman, let us make man in our image. So there are those who are attempting to form us in their image, or they hope they would, but not just to force something on us to hurt our feelings or make us angry or do something for us that shouldn't be done. When you see the whole scheme of it, it's the best thing that could ever happen. Let us make man, mankind, male or male and female, in our image according to our likeness. And then, of course, they were to have dominion over this earth. One way to understand the Bible, and I've mentioned this before, is to see what it does not say. So let's read it again and see what it does not say. Genesis 1, 26 said, let us make man in our image. And then later, man and woman can make everybody else in their image. It didn't say that, did it? We are to be made in God's image. Everybody is. And it didn't say anything at all about our making others in our image. To think that we can make somebody else in our image, in a sense, though I know it isn't wrong to influence people, and they do become like us, and they are improved in things because of us, but they still are their own individual. So to think that we can make everybody else in our image is an error in judgment. A major, fundamental, basic error in our thinking and in our judgment. Because learning to do things God's way is a major part of Christian conversion. And it's especially true in this aspect of life. Trying to make anybody or everybody else in our image is a continuing source of irritation, frustration, and sometimes anger against those who are attempting to do that. As with many other aspects of life, it's like all those individual groups I mentioned before. They looked into the Bible, saw what God was going to make them in God's image, and said, well, we'll fix that. We'll fix that. And they may immediately begin to try to make others in their image. And after trying to do what they weren't asked to do, because God didn't ask us to do that, and because of never being able to accomplish it, they've backed off, become critical, negative, sometimes cynical, if not angry at everything and everybody else because of that, because they couldn't do it. but they never were asked or intended to do it that way. So if creating others in our image is not our calling in life, what is it then? What is it? What is our calling? Well, it's simple. Let's look at 1:26 again. Genesis 1:26, one other time. God said, "Let us make man in our image, and let them have dominion over." Our job is to allow God to form us in His image. And that's where we fail. We're trying to form everybody else in our image while we're failing to allow God, and I put emphasis on the word allow. God is not going to force it on us. He will not make us, because if He did, we wouldn't be the product He had designed. We must allow God to form us in His image. Allow us to form us in His image. So, with that paradigm in mind, let's revisit some old scriptures. Who knows, maybe we'll learn a little something from it today. And you won't have to go back to the dining room and get a cup of coffee to keep awake. Actually, what God asks us to do is very positive, creates great happiness, an interesting life, the ability to grow, and a forward-looking Christian model. That's what God asks of us. Let's look at one of the object lessons Jesus gave to the 12 in His course of their learning in Mark 9, verse 31. Mark chapter 9 and verse 31. Mark chapter 9 and verse 31. He taught His disciples and said, "The Son of Man is betrayed, being betrayed, going to be betrayed into the hands of men. They're going to kill Him, and after that He's killed, He'll rise the third day in order to pay for the sins of man and to be the one who would be able to influence greatly the change in human beings." It next says in verse 30, they didn't understand what He was talking about. They didn't have a clue as to what He was talking about, and they were afraid to ask Him. So they then came to Capernaum, and when He was in the house — and people think He's an itinerant preacher, never had any natural place to stay — but He says, into the house, He asked them, "What was it you were discussing or disputing or arguing about among yourselves on the road?" But they didn't want to tell Him. They kept silence. For on the road they'd been disputing about who's going to be the greatest. That's what they wanted to know. And so in verse 35, He sat down, called them together, and said, "If you desire to be first, then he shall be last of all and servant." In other words, to serve. A side issue of that, or a side comment of that, many people talk about making money. This talks about, if you want to be first, then you have to serve and do things for people, and you will rise to the top and be the greatest in some ways. People talk about making, "Oh, yeah, make good money." The only ones that make money is the Federal Reserve. They print it, and it's not worth anything. The ones that make money are the ones who earn it. They earn the money. That's the point that's being made here, of earning the respect, earning the stature, earning the respect and honor that is given to you. And so He took a little child and gave them the example that we have to become like this little child and be humble about it. Well, you'll find immediately after this teaching session, John showed him how little he really got from it in verse 38. the apostle-to-be John answered him and he said, "Teacher, we saw someone the other day and he doesn't follow us casting out. He's not following us, but he's casting out demons. He's claiming to have the power from God to cast out demons. And we forbade him. We said, you can't do that. That's not right. Because you're not following us. You're not like us. You're different. You're an independent. You can't do that." Notice Christ's answer. In essence, Jesus said, leave him alone. He said, don't forbid him. Now, he didn't say go along with him. He just said, leave him alone. For no one who works a miracle in my name can soon afterwards speak evil of me. If he's with me, he's with me. If he's doing things truly in my name, then he's okay. Now, I'm not here to say that he never will be with the true group, ultimately. And I've seen this, those who were independents, and they did it their way. They never gave in to submission to anybody else. And I've seen others who did, and they realized, well, wait a minute, I'm just an appendage out here, and they became a part of the group. Jesus said, do not forbid him. And so he said, in a sense, leave him alone. We try to make people in our own image, and if they don't respond, sometimes we try to shut them down. You know, shut them down so they can't operate. Jesus didn't say in verse 39, he didn't say, good job, John, go shut him down. He said, leave him alone or let him be. And in verse 40, he said, if he's not against us, then he's on our side. So that's a part of trying to make everybody in our own image. We do it not only to individuals, but to organizations and groups sometimes too. Now, by saying, forbid him not, Jesus was not asking us to compromise, not at all. In verse 50, he said, have salt in yourself. Salt is good, but if it loses its flavor, meaning if we get angry, if we turn away. And so he said, have salt in yourselves. He was talking to us about growing and changing. Having salt in ourselves, we don't give up our values. We have peace with people. It is not our job to make everybody else in our image. And even if it were, we really couldn't do it. Jesus is the one who died to pay the penalty. He is the one in whose image we are to be made. Now, how to deal with those who may have are not being made in God's image, shall we say. There may be times when those who are also in the physical group may be doing questionable things. What do we do with those? We can't remake them. We can't make them in our own image. So what do we do? Romans 16 and verse 16 has this to say. Romans 16 and verse 17, actually. Paul had difficulties in Rome, and he said, brethren, I urge you. Now, it says note in the New King James. It means take notice of or be aware of. Note those who cause divisions and offenses contrary to the doctrine which you learned, and avoid them. Now, that's all it said, just if they don't want to be like us, then there's nothing we can do about that. But that doesn't mean we have to bring them in and make them part of us when they really don't want to be, individually or as a group. For those who are such do not serve our Lord Jesus Christ, but their own belly. Now, that was Paul talking. It's pretty strong language that he used also. Now, there is a stronger one in Titus chapter 3 and verse 10. If you can't make someone do what is right, but they persist in pestering you, shall we say, and they are a part of the group, say like in the United Church of God, or sometimes even in the family, in Titus chapter 3 and verse 10. And we don't use this word very much anymore. First of all, he said in verse 9 that we are to avoid foolish disputes, contentions, strivings. They're not profitable, he said. So what do you do if there's continued contention and things like that? It said reject a divisive person after the first and second admonition. Reject? What do you mean reject? If you have a reject in your company, you usually get rid of it because you're not going to be able to sell it. It's a reject. Reject this divisive individual after you have had a talk, nothing happened, another talk, nothing happened. You know then what their view is, what their goal is, what their mindset is. And sometimes we don't use the term disfellowship much anymore. I use the term, I think it's about time we part company. I think it's about time we part company. We don't believe I can't make you in my image and you can't make me in your image. So since there is division, I think it's time that we part company. That's what it says here. Reject the individual. We cannot make them in our image. If then it's not our job as a lifestyle, as an individual of the body of Christ, if it isn't our job to correct everybody, what then is our job? How do we conduct our life toward others, among others, for others? Well, let's look at some of the old verses of Jesus. It has been said to those of us who speak that often we say, well, we all know this. Maybe, maybe not. Maybe we've read it 100 times, but it hasn't yet sunk in. So let's look at some of the old words of Jesus and look at it as what Jesus said. Not what Herbert Armstrong said, or Joe Ticott said, or Vernon Hargrove said, but what Jesus said. He is our older brother and Savior and the head of the church. In Matthew 5, verse 14, he laid out the role for us and what we are to be like. And he is the one that dictated, shall we say, or expressed or urged us. In chapter 5 of Matthew, verse 14, it said, you are, or in other words, you are to be a light of the world. Did you know that a light never says anything? It hums and buzzes and pops and sputters, but it never says a word. It just illuminates the situation. You are a light of the world. Do you and I look on ourselves that way, that we are a light of the world or to the world or for the world? You go to a museum and you look at all the things and it says, this is a crocodile, or this is a whatever it is, one of these ancient beings, animals. That's what, oh, I never saw one of those before. I'm glad to see that. We are to stand there and be a light, or shall we say, an example. In verse 16, it said, let your light shine in front of everybody else. It did not say, let your voice be loud enough that they finally have to give in, but let your light so shine before men that they may see the good things that you're doing. And in that way, you'll glorify God. So our job is to be a light or an example so that others can see. Dilly could probably get fired from her job if they really wanted to, because when she has to go with me certain places, she just said, I won't be there tomorrow. But she has done such a good job of her job that they are willing to put up with that craziness because of the good things that she adds to the company. So we are to be a light and we are to be an example. And when we are, they still won't follow us necessarily, but they are impressed by what they see in us. But if we try to batter them down and make them in our image, we just drive them farther and farther away. I haven't accomplished that yet. I still get a little irritated sometimes, and I say things I shouldn't say, and I realize in the midst of saying it, this ain't going to work. And it doesn't. Does that mean then that when we're told that we're an example, that all day long, every day, we realize that our every action is an example? So then, knowing that we're to be an example all day long, everywhere we go, we are constantly posing and posturing so as to be an example. I read an article about Rick Perry, governor of Texas, years ago, and it said he was a master in posing and posturing so as to get the best view in the camera of him so that he could win the election. I thought Texans were better than that. But I guess not. They're human too, aren't they? No, we're not to be posing and posturing so as to give them our best view, which really isn't our best view. That's really vanity, egotism. And it's the very antithesis of Christian example. Being an example is merely a byproduct of something else. And in the process of performing that something else, we may not even know that we're being viewed as an example. We don't know that. We're not trying to be, and yet we are. What is that something else? It's something we're asked to do all the time by Jesus Christ and God the Father, and that is to grow, Christian growth. Personal Christian growth so as to build an habitual lifestyle according to the principles and guidelines given to us in the Bible. Being an example is merely an outgrowth or a byproduct of personal Christian growth. And once you get turned on to that, it's intoxicating. It's very enjoyable to your own self. And it's very profitable to other people that they see you as an example. Let's look in Luke 19. And you will find that this personal Christian growth is talked about. But it uses money as an example. Luke 19 and verse 11. We spoke a lot about a point that is being made here many years ago, and it only caused people to be more critical of us as an organization. Luke 19 and verse 11 says, as they heard what Jesus was talking about, Jesus spoke another parable. Because he was near Jerusalem and because they thought the kingdom of God would appear immediately. We often hear, time is short. You can just see it, time is short. And we used to teach the great tribulation and the place of safety and when we flee very, very strongly. And we were looked on as a cult that nobody wanted to follow rather than performing good deeds and Christian growth that they could see that we were a decent human being that they wouldn't mind being like. And so he then gave a parable. They thought the kingdom was going to be there tomorrow. So he said, a nobleman went to a far country to receive a kingdom for himself, and he was going to come back. So he called his servants, delivered to them 10 minas, and said, do business with this till I come. Now, if a business doesn't grow, they got a problem. Pretty soon they're going to close doors, lay off people, and they'll be a bygone thought. Do business till I come. What he was saying is, build your business, grow, change, improve, produce. Do business till I come. Well, they didn't know what he meant. The citizens hate him, and they said, we're not going to have this man rule over us, so it's a matter of what we allow to guide our life, who we allow to tell us what to do, how we do what they told us to do. So when he came back, he asked those to whom he had given this money to be called, and he wanted to know how much they had gained by trading. How much did you gain? Did you lose your shirt? Yeah, I did. Well, what'd you do wrong? Nothing. I did everything right. And then you know the story. He asked, how much did you gain? Or, as a result of your efforts, how much did you grow? We are to be a light, we are to be an example, and we are to have results of growth. Paul used the word example in 1 Timothy 4, so let's look at that. 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 12. First Timothy chapter 4 and verse 12, he used the word, I believe, example. Yes. Let no one, and he was speaking to a young man, Timothy, let no one despise you because you're young. Nothing wrong in being young. I mean, you're whatever age you are, you can't do much about that. But just because you're young does not mean that you have to be an idiot, if I can use that word. Or it doesn't mean that you have to put up with people despising you because you're just a kid. And you can do that by your personal growth and example of results in your life that are not objectionable, they are noticeable. Let no one despise your youth, but be an example to the believers. And he's speaking to a young man about being an example to the old folks. In word, which means the words you use, or the conversations you have, or the vocabulary that you use. In conduct, which would mean lifestyle. In love, that is your view of the opposite sex in a sense, or of human beings in general. Our mindset toward other people, is it love or hate or despite? In spirit, that is mindset, in faith, and in purity. So he was encouraged to be an example and not to let the fact that he was young hinder him in fulfilling that. Paul actually was laying out here a program of personal Christian growth for Timothy, in a sense. Read it again. He said, example to the believers in conduct, love, spirit, faith, purity. When's the last time we outlined a program of personal Christian growth for ourselves? Or have we ever? Some might say, well, I don't know where to start. Well, how about word, the language we use? How about conduct, the lifestyle we live? How about giving, how we use our money toward other people? Attitude, mindset, faith, believing, wholesomeness. Are we a wholesome person? How can we know? Have you ever tracked yourself in any of your habits? He's dead now. He fell and killed himself years ago. one of my brothers-in-law, he could be tracked very easily. If you walked along, you didn't know how far he was ahead of you, but you knew who was doing the walking by the footprints. You could tell how he walked. You could track him easily because his steps were very easily recognizable. And if any of you walk like this, I only mention this as an example to illustrate the point. He walked like a duck. Most people walk with their feet straight forward. He walked with his feet out. You could track him anywhere. You knew who it was and where he was going. That's how you can track your own self. How do you walk, spiritually speaking? Do you keep track of your habits and see, well, wait a minute, I've been doing this. Oh, I didn't know I did that many times this week. I didn't know I lived that way. I didn't know. Well, why didn't we know? Because we never tracked it. I mean, the Indians learned how to track the animals, and they could tell. I don't think we know much about tracking ourselves these days, because that's dangerous, because it will reveal to us what we really are. Paul gives some categories of life that we're all very well acquainted with, and they have to do with this trying to force somebody else to be like us and how to avoid that. And what Paul said to us, and is still applicable to us, offers a very good framework for our personal growth. So let's look in Ephesians 5 and 6 for a few items. Ephesians chapter 5, we read this often. I think I read it in another sermon of another thing recently. But it is involved in this forcing others to be like us, or Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 25. We get down to the husband. Paul is talking to one aspect of humanity and their conduct. In verse 25, he said to the husband, love your wife. Now, did he say, slap her in the face and tell her, you don't listen to anything I say? Abuse her because she doesn't do what you tell her to do? That happens quite often. After a few beers and the woman doesn't do what they say, the woman gets beaten. And yet, here it's because she wasn't doing it the way he wanted it done. Love your wife, which means a strong emotional attachment and appropriate words and actions toward the wife. And he said, do it just as Christ loved the church, and so that he could set it apart and cleanse it, so that he could present it to himself a glorious church. Now, most men want to find a beautiful woman that does everything as he says, but when she does it, he may beat her on or curse her or do some things and angry at her and try to force her to do some things or whatever. But here it says that he has a part in presenting this wonderful, beautiful, talented, obedient woman to himself and producing that by how he treats her. Not having spot or wrinkle. People spend a lot of money today to take the wrinkles out. That's what it said to us as men. Quit trying to make her in your own image. Treat her as she should be treated. Be a light and an example. Take care of her. And she'll love you forever. Then to the wife, in verse 22, it said, submit to your own husband, not flirtatiously, submitting to someone else's husband, it didn't say that she's to believe everything he said. It says the husband is, meaning he's supposed to be the leader of the household, as Christ is the leader of the church. So, since he is to be the leader, then you should show deference at times to your husband. And that is sometimes what causes a husband to get mad, angry, infuriated, and to abuse a woman because she had the audacity to challenge his authority. A light or an example, not forcing them to be like we are. I mean, if you take that literally all the way, that's impossible. They didn't pop out of the womb in such a condition that you could even make them in your image or us in their image. We weren't made to ever be like each other physically from the womb, from conception. And you're going to hack a few parts here and there to try to make us like them, if I can put it that way. Now to the children. And I know sometimes the children listen, sometimes they don't. Oh, Dad, do we have to? In chapter 6, verse 1, this being a light and example can also be for children. Children know how to take advantage of their parents. They know how to pit parents against each other. They can do that easily. They can cause difficulty. And if you don't pick up on that, you can be to your wit's end. In verse 1, it said to the children, speaking specifically and directly to the young people, obey your parents in the Lord. And it put a little extra part there. It didn't say knuckle under to, even if they beat you all the time. Obey your parents in the Lord. If your parents tell you to, it's all right, if you want to go have sexual intercourse with kids at school, that's fine, I don't care, do whatever you want to. Or he may tell you to tell lies for him. If you believe in God and you are a light and an example, then you have to think for yourself, but still show deference to the parents. And it said honor. And I think I've said this before. Many youth think they are, and I say this just as words to explain, the hottest thing that ever hit this earth. After me, there ain't going to be nothing greater. Now, you and I wouldn't have thought that, would we? No. Perish the thought. It said, honor your father and mother. Why? Well, where did you come from? Did you pop out of your mother's womb? Did you nurse her breast when she gave you nourishment and milk for life? Is she a great reason why you're the greatest thing that ever was? Is she a part of that? Even if she doesn't seem to like you, she gave you life. So it said honor. And it's the first law that God asks of a child with promise. We sometimes don't like, we think, well, it's not Christian to ask, what's in it for me? But God promises a lot for people as to what's in it for us if we follow the rules. And there's a lot in it for us. And we're foolish if we don't accept the offer, because you're not going to find a better offer anywhere else. Because it said, so that it can be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. Then it says to the parents, and this is the hard one, parents, don't provoke your children to wrath. Don't make them angry just to stir them up. Bring them up in the, I think the old King James says, nourishment and admonition. It says training and admonition. In other words, nourish means to feed them properly so that they have a good body, they are handsome and beautiful, and admonish them so that they will follow the right rules. This is being a light and an example. And you may not say anything about it, you just do what we should do. Ordinarily, we point the finger at somebody else and say, do you see that? Can you believe that? Or we point a finger at them trying to get them to see a particular principle in the law and they say, do you see that? Yeah, I see it. Well, do it. Do it. Well, it's a proper verse because personal growth accepts it as personal item for us, not for someone else. It's for us. If we say, well, do you see that, what the Bible says? We should be looking at it first and foremost and then exemplifying it so that they can see it in living color. There are a lot of places in the Bible that talk about things like this, personal development, and we should take it personally because I think, and you can see it in the lives of those who are, once a person experiences the good results of personal growth, Christian growth, shall we say, not becoming religious as such, but personal Christian growth, it becomes intoxicating. You like the results. You enjoy life. Personal growth is the very antithesis of trying to make someone else in our own example and image. And personal growth, I'm sorry, being an example, is a byproduct of our personal growth. We all wish the other person could be like us. Why can't you be like me? That's a good question. That's a very, very good question. Why can't you be like me? We wish other people would be like us. While other people, and we don't realize it, are looking at us with a frown or a smile or a sneer and saying, why can't they be like me? We both are wishing the other could be like the other. But it seldom, if ever, happens the way we would like it to happen because it wasn't designed to be that way. It never was designed to be that way. There's a very, very basic flaw in that thinking. Why can't you be like me? And the flaw is that we have the paradigm backwards. Backwards. Let's look again at Genesis 1, verse 26. Genesis 1 and verse 26. God said to Adam and Eve, or to the God number two, let us make man, Adam, and Adam and Eve, let us make them in our image. We were born and designed to be like God, which is such a monumentally wonderful goal that it's almost impossible to comprehend that. What is God like? The fruit of God's Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, goodness, kindness, gentleness, self-control, plus a spirit-composed body that will allow us then to live forever. And that's in contrast to the works of the flesh, which are misuse of the human body, the human life, and life itself. Let us make man in our image so that they can be like us. He won't force us, and we're not able to force anybody else. God could force us in a sense, but he doesn't. He won't. He'd run his plan. But we're not able to force others. We usually wind up killing them if they don't. You know, some dictators, if the peons of their republic don't follow them, they get rid of them. Let us make man in our image, he says. That reveals the flaw of why can't you be like me? It does not say that we are to remake others in our image. We never had that as a guideline for us. We were to be a light and example so that they could see and maybe they would follow us in their worship of God. It says that God said, let us make man and woman in our image, rather than trying to make all others in our image. And our job in life, our work in life, the future of our life is to be involved in working at allowing God to make us in his image.